Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Tefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Good evening. I'm Ruth Anna Marte Fio, and this is Gather Round. Tonight we have Raymond Blaine on Palestine. We also have Sarit Jacobson with Tamer Hoffman from Israel. And then we have Morgan Jones. We're talking festivals and paganism and polyamory. So we're going to get right into this. Hello, Blaine. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How is everybody?
I hope everybody's enjoying the spring.
Yes. Well, today is a little bit of a somber and sobering day
it
in
is.
Palestine. Yes. Today marks the 65th anniversary of the Nakba, or in Arabic, which means the catastrophe, basically a Holocaust after the Holocaust that people said it would never happen again. And to this day, it's still continuing to happen. And people are still losing their homes and their lives and their livelihood to the Zionist occupation of Palestine.
Right.
So what I'm going to read about is basically what happened in the West Bank yesterday, because they're a day ahead of us.
Right.
So thousands of people in the West Bank and Gaza Strip on Wednesday marked the 65th anniversary of the Nakba, an event which saw hundreds of thousands of Palestinians displaced from their homes in is what now is Israel. About 760,000 is what the total was of the people that were displaced, and about 460 villages were completely destroyed within a couple of days. And not only did they get rid of all the inhabitants, but then they either inhabited them with Jews or they completely bulldozed them to the ground and then planted a forest over top of it to cover their crimes and also to cover up any existence of any villages. Anyways, but sirens were sounded for 65 seconds in the West Bank to mark the start of the celebrations. I don't like to call it a celebration. I don't think it's a celebration at all.
Right.
With thousands of people gathering in Ramallah, Nablus, Qalqilya, and other West Bank cities. The right of return does not become invalid or infective as time passes, because this right is the core of the Palestinian plight. PLO official Wazil Abdul Rasif said while addressing crowds at Yasser Arafat's tomb. In Nablus, a minute of silence was held before demonstrators marched in the city, waving black flags and Palestinian flags side by side. After all these years of the Nakba, the Palestinian people have not achieved their goals, but they have managed to accumulate major victories, such as establishing the PLO in order to tell Palestinian narratives, the governor of Nablus, Jabril Bakri, said. In Gaza, faction leaders addressed thousands of people who had gathered in the streets, calling for unity in the Palestinian leadership as number one priority. The Palestinian people have made hundreds of sacrifices during 65 years of Nakba in order to establish a Palestinian state and stick to the right of return. Nazza Salih, Gaza-based leader with the Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine, said, the Palestinian people have stayed firm on their land and insist on the right of return despite all attempts and efforts to erase Palestinian identity. Senior PFLP leader, Khayyid Al-Ghul, said national unity is vital in order to overcome pressures to accept an alternative homeland, while Islamic Jihad says that Israel's occupation is void and must be resisted by all means. So around 160 Palestinians did remain in Israel after 48, but now that number is around 1.36 million people, or 20% of the population, Israel's population, but they only received 3% of services in the occupied territories and in Israel combined. So it's definitely not good over there for those guys either.
Mm-hmm.
This story is about a survivor. She was 80. She's 80 years old. Her name is Gathia. And she writes that she was once a carefree teenager who lived with her mother and sister in the village of Al-Qastina, northeast of Gaza. Although her early life was marked by tragedy, her grandmother died when she was born, and her father passed away on Al-Adid. She said she had a happy childhood. We had a very nice house, a big house, with marble floors in the hallway. My father was a farmer, and we had farmland with oranges, apple trees, fruit trees, and others. I used to spend my days playing with my sister and the other girls in the village. We were very happy. Her life changed dramatically in 1948 when Jewish militias arrived in the area where she lived. We had heard stories about the attacks on other villages. Still, the attack on El Costina came without warning. Before that, there had been a British military camp nearby, but that year the British left and allowed the Jewish groups to take over. Some Jewish militia members were wearing uniforms. Others had civilian clothes, Gutthia said. And when they arrived in the village, it began firing at people, killing three villagers. We ran away, afraid for our safety, and went to Tel Asifi, a nearby village on a hill. It was within walking distance, and we were in a hurry to leave, so we didn't take anything with us. It was like doomsday. It was utter terror. People's minds were imprisoned by the fear. We couldn't think of anything except leaving, not even simple things like bringing food with us. After a few days in Tel Asifi, militias came again and forced them to leave. Gathia and her family fled to Beit Jibril to spend the night, but were followed and forced to leave again. If you wanted to die, you stayed. If you wanted to live, you left, she recalls. Their main aim was not to kill us, but to get rid of us. They had wanted all of us dead. Not one of us would have survived. They used fear to force us to leave our land. The family walked along the coast until they reached Gaza. There were thousands of people who fled other villages, sleeping in mosques or on the street, Gathia says. And the UNRWA began to build tents for the families. Garthi and her husband, Ahmed, also a refugee from El Costina, now have 32 grandchildren and live with their son, Naeed. Yeah, shit, talk about a fighter, huh? She says she thinks often about her village and had the chance to visit El Costina in the early 80s and 90s. El Costina crosses my mind very often. Does it make sense that I cannot be in my home, on my land, in the place where I grew up? I still dream of the days of the land. More than 760,000 Palestinians, estimated today to number 4.8 million, with their descendants pushed into exile or driven out of their homes in the conflict surrounding Israel's creation in 1948. Around 160 Palestinians who remained in Israel after 1948 now number around 1.36 million people, or 20% of the country's population. So you can chase them, you can run them, you can scare them, but you know what? They're never leaving. So
that's right.
The Zionist Jews can just forget about it. It ain't happening. They're not going anywhere. You can continue to try to do your stuff, but it's going to end. History's not on your side.
No.
I really believe that.
And we will have the right of return.
Yes, I agree.
Yes.
Okay. Another thing I wanted to talk about is I was talking about Maysam Youssef. She's coming to a leadership conference in Washington, D.C. She was able to do some interviews, and she had it paid for. And so she's coming to D.C. She lives in Gaza. So if anybody wants to do any, have her speak for any events anywhere in the United States, just hit me up on my Facebook page and I can put you in contact with the people. And you guys can see if you can get her to come and speak at your events. There's nothing
wonderful.
More powerful than someone from there coming and speaking at your events because they lived it.
Right.
So.
And your Facebook page is Blaine Pitcher, which is
that's correct.
Yes.
Yes, that's correct. Okay. And that's all I have tonight from that. Everybody else that I'm talking to in Gaza, they're all doing okay. They're, you know, they wish this stuff would end. We want to get this resolved. I've watched some different clips, and I think everybody's on the same page, that one state solution, not a two. We need to have equal rights for everyone, and we can't have this your state, your neighborhood, my neighborhood stuff. It has to be a big conglomerate because of the way the settlers have sold the land. There's no contingency. And
right.
To think that if they were to all get together and be one, how awesome that would be. They would be the most protected Arab nation in the world. That would be all
really?
Right by me. You know, I'd be okay
yeah.
with that.
Yeah.
You know, they could be the strongest Arab nation in the world. And in just a blink of an eye. And maybe that's why it doesn't happen. Maybe Saudi Arabia and Qatar are worried about that. Who knows?
Could be. I mean, we don't know what's going on in their minds. But I'm very optimistic. I mean, I have my days, and I'm sure you do too. But
sure.
So many more people. The Israeli activists also. I mean, they're really on fire, the Palestinian activists for Palestine. And so many people just say, okay, it's going to come faster than we're thinking. It's not going to, we're going to see it in our lifetime, and maybe it won't be that long.
So, no, I don't think it's going to be that long. You know, apartheid South Africa fell in a couple of days. It was a snap of a finger, and it was over. And I really believe that's what's going to happen in Palestine. Something large is going to happen, and this is going to end.
Yeah.
Because this can't continue. This can't go on like this. And the Jews and the Israelis and the Zionists can't keep lying because we're on to them. We are on to them. They can continue.
That's it. Right.
Spin it all you want, but you know what? It spins right down to you guys are wrong.
Yeah, there's still, you know, there's still a few people who actually believe the lies, and a lot of those people are in this country that we're in, the U.S. But that's just because they're ignorant. And, you know,
and I'm here to educate them.
There you go. That's it. Yep. I mean, the more we do, you know, just sometimes it seems, oh, my God, they'll never get it. But, you know, just everybody hammering away, sometimes there's something and they say, oh, my God, that's what you were talking about. And, you know, they start to get it then. So
yeah, and then they start to, it's amazing once they get it. They're like, well, I got to do something. I was like, that's what we want to hear.
That's why I think a lot of people have been so long in denial about, and not just Palestine, but a lot of issues, because part of them realizes that once they acknowledge how wrong things are, their responsibility is to right that.
Yeah.
And they're afraid. They think that, well, I can't do anything by myself, or, well, what will I do? So there's a lot of fear going on there. But,
well, if
you
want to know what to do, you hit me up on Facebook and I'll give you a project. That's not a problem. There's more than enough stuff to do.
There's plenty of things to do.
You can do lots of things to support Palestine and to also support, you know, for what it's worth, support Israel and the people that are trying to, you know, turn this into a one-state solution.
Right.
You know, this should be enjoyed by Jews, Christians, Muslims. Everyone should be able to enjoy
everyone.
The area.
Exactly.
And I don't, I don't condone kicking anybody out.
No.
So.
No. There are a lot of Israeli activists for Palestine who have been disowned by their families. It's very hard for them to find work, if at all. I mean, so they're suffering right along because they're taking the right stand.
Right, because they're on the right side, and unfortunately their governments are on the wrong side. Now that's another thing. You know, this is to you, Palestine. I'm going to say it again. You young people need to put together a undivided front, and you need to get this government under control. You need to get some leaders that are serious about making peace, because right now your leaders are not doing that. They are fighting amongst themselves, and that's doing nobody any good except Israel.
Right.
And so people need to really pay attention and try to get involved, especially the youth. You know, I have a Facebook page up on my page that's Gaza Youth Breaks Out. Awesome, awesome page. I'm not quite sure who runs it, but awesome. And so I really believe that the Gaza youth and the Palestinian youth in the West Bank, they're the ones that are going to make the difference. And if they can make those connections, we're good to go.
I mean,
they don't have the animosity.
That's it. I mean, they have focused so much on their education because that's so big there.
Right.
You know, so we're not talking about, you know, just young kids that are ignorant at all. I mean, they're on top of it. They know what's going on there. They know what's going on everywhere. They're really
Palestinians are one of the highest educated Arab communities in the Middle East, and their literacy rate is around 90%, and they almost all speak English.
Yeah.
These people know what's going on. They probably speak more than English, but I don't speak any other language, so I've never tried it out. But
you know, that's me. I mean, you know, they're speaking 3, 4, 5 languages, and it's, well, I do pretty well with English. But,
on most days.
On most days, right. But, yes, thank God they speak our language because we haven't.
Yeah.
I mean, I still want to learn Arabic, so, you know.
Yeah, well, we still have time, you know.
Yeah, and we'll do that in our spare time, and then later we will have really time for it. So
absolutely,
good. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But Blaine, thank you so much. And
you're very welcome.
One of these days, bring us up to date on the kids that are riding.
I will do that. I will. I'll get some more letters from them for the following 2 weeks, and I'll be reading some more letters. It's just that we've had so much going on that
we've had to talk
about some other stuff. But they're all there, and they're all listening, and they're all doing good. So
okay. Well, hi to the kids. Yeah.
Yeah, and keep saying your prayers, and we're going to keep on fighting for Palestine, okay?
That's right.
All right. Long live Palestine.
Long live, long love.
Raymond Blaine on Palestine.
Thanks.
Take care now.
Bye-bye. It's Raymond Blaine on Palestine, and now we are going to go to Sarit Jacobson and a pre-recorded segment with Tamar Hoffman in Israel.
This is Sarit speaking, and we have Tamar Hoffman with us from Israel, who is an activist and a revolutionary. And we will talk about what has been happening and what is we hope to achieve. So, Tamar, what would you like to say about what the situation right now or anything like that?
Wow, the situation in Israel is not very well. I think all the world knows about the occupation, about the Jews that live here and are not occupied, but still they are in a very bad condition. Many poor people in Israel this day, not much for everybody, much for the rich, less for the people.
Sounds familiar.
We have so many problems, more than a normal country, because we have also about 2 or 3 million people under occupation in our backyard. Israel is in a very bad, I think, situation is, wow.
It is.
Impossible, almost impossible. But we hope. We have our dreams, our hopes.
Do you think there is ever a chance that the Israelis will decide to give up the occupation?
I believe it's going to be very soon. It sounds like I'm crazy. I believe that something that is going on for so many years will end, but it will end very soon. I believe so, and I'm not the only one.
Oh, that
many
is great.
Many people believe now, yes, that we can stop it, that we can... there was 2 years ago, there was a protest during summertime in the whole country, but mostly in Tel Aviv, in the avenues of Tel Aviv. People lived in tents and try to change Israel. What we achieved after this protest of that summer is that there are many groups in Israel that are activists, that they change their opinions about the occupation, about what is happening here, about how we are slaves like everybody in the world, like being 99%.
Oh, great.
It's more complicated here because we are two groups. One group that believes that we are one of the 99% and everybody is the same. And the other group that believes that we are the chosen people of God, which is...
It sounds so crazy.
Yes, it is crazy. It is really crazy.
It made me laugh. It's so too crazy to comprehend.
Anyway, I belong to a group that is called ODS Jaffa, which is talking about one country for both people.
Amen.
Yes. And I believe that most Palestinian people, they prefer one country for both people.
Yes, I agree.
And I hope that the Jews here, the Israelis, whatever how you will call them, will come to this conclusion very soon. Now we are making we are going and talking with everybody. Everybody that invites us is having a good evening with. And they listen and they say what they say. Most of them are Zionists, which is very not solvable, because I think Zionism is dead. but they don't see it yet. It's time for Zionism to die because it didn't help any of us.
Yeah,
I agree.
Anyway, I feel it's a feeling more than anything else that this is the time for the change.
Oh, yeah.
The change, that there is going to be peace here, one country for both people, and no more poor people. But it also depends on the universal revolution. There is a revolution in the world.
There is.
We are going. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I believe there is, and I believe that we are going towards one big place called Earth. No countries, no borders, no poverty, no poor people, neither hungry.
Revolution is evolution here. I hope so.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That sounds so wonderful.
Amazing.
I had today a very interesting conversation with a friend. We decided that this summer we are going to surprise all rich people in Israel. We want to put made houses, I don't know how to say it in English, houses that were pre-made in the factories, caravans.
Oh, great, fabricated homes.
Fabricated homes at the land of the rich and near the rich neighborhoods, and we want to put the poor people just to have a nice summer, nice protest of this summer, and we try now to get the money for those homes. I wish that people from the United States will help us in this project. We just want to put some poor people near the rich.
To
the market in the neighborhood and to the schools and to the summer schools, whatever, to live together. We are brothers, aren't we?
Yes.
All of us. Yes. For the brotherhood of the people.
Really?
For the poor people near the rich, it is time for us to mix.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yes.
That's my project.
Yeah.
So if I have this beautiful conversation with you that is heard in the United States, please help us to raise the money to buy this pre-made homes or this caravans, this whatever, that will help us put the poor near the rich and make Israel a better place.
Really, it would be nice if some companies would help, some of the companies that are making these.
Yes, if they donate it, it will be the best, because We don't have any money. We don't have anybody that can help us. We are the 99% of Israel poor people.
Yeah.
try to change your things. I also help the Palestinians here. I mean, I'm in both sides. I help the poor and the Palestinians, and then I'm very active with the peace movement in Israel, not only ODS, also Women in Black, and I'm one of the outrageous grannies. We sing songs.
I love that.
We sing protest songs that we write, and there is hope. Never give up with the hope.
That's amazing. You're beautiful. Thank you so much. That's so inspiring.
Really,
people with hope and doing so much. I was with the Women in Black here in Tennessee.
What is the Women in Black? What is that?
It's an organization. We have an argument if it was started in Israel or in Spain. Organization of women that meets each other for a vigil once a week. In most places, it's on Friday at 1 p.m. We stand in the street and we do things for peace. We stand here against the occupation, but there was in the women in Spain, the women in Spain fund us. They give us money. They donate us money, the women in black of Israel. But they protest. Now they don't, I believe. Now they have their revolution. But it's against war. I know there are many groups in the United States of women in black. Yes, we stand for 25 years already.
Yeah, we were told it started in Israel.
I believe so, but some people say it's not. It started in Spain, so I don't know. But we stand all over the places that we are, and there are many places in the world, for something that has a connection with peace, with peace making. In the United States, there are many... walls to protest.
Yes.
So
we can't
there are many
here.
Groups of women.
Right. We can't keep up.
Well, would you address, I just wanted to ask, Sari told me that you had been an officer in the IDF.
Yes, I was. I was captain. I was Zionist once. I had all the bad chance in my past. I had a very, very big... sack of my bad things that I did, my bad deeds in the past. I was a Zionist, but I was leftish all my life. I mean, I was in the peace group all my life, as well as I remember when I started to understand politics. But I was Zionist. Many people think that Zionism is okay with the peace movement, which is not. It's not going together. Because Zionists want the country only for Jews and to make it a religious country, a country of the Jews, ethnocratic.
Yeah.
I don't like it. But I was in the IDF, yes. I was in the intelligence. Yes, yes. I did bad things in my past. No, but I didn't fight. I never killed anybody.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I am also vegan. I mean, I am for everything that is good and that
and
is loving.
You were a child. 18 is still a child. As far as I'm concerned.
Yes, I was a child. Yes, it was 40 years ago. Yeah. But this is the law in Israel. You must go to the army. You cannot say, I don't want, I don't fit, I don't like. Besides, my father had dreams that I will be officer. So I went and became officer. He's already dead, but I was a good child.
No.
It was his dream. My parents were Holocaust survivors, both. And my father's dream was that his daughters, he has had three daughters, will be officers in the army.
Yeah.
So we tried. I succeeded.
Yeah.
I have two sisters. They didn't succeed. My younger sister is a citizen of the United States. She lived there in Florida,
Have you
she
visited?
She's not interested in them. Yes,
really?
I visit her. She visits her,
But she's
not interested. We are very special. Excuse me?
But she's not interested in politics?
My sister, my young sister who lives in the United States is a... she elected Barack Obama, which was okay with all of us, and she's not interested, really interested in Israeli politics. She's now American. She has two sons there. She believes that the United States is a better place for poor people to live. And she says, if I will get poor or sick or something, I prefer that my sons will grow up here and have food if I cannot provide. My older sister is... Wow, she has four children, settlers, they are religious, they belong to the right wing, right wing of politics in Israel.
Oh.
So we don't speak politics because we love each other.
Yeah.
Well, this is Israel. We are so torn. It's unbelievable what we are. I will live here. She suffers like me from the banks and from the state and the laws and everything. And she had very bad times. But she believes that this should be a Jewish country, Jewish state.
Okay.
And she's doing everything, and she has four kids, well, grown up already. And they believe the same, that this should be a Jewish country.
Mm-hmm.
And I love them, all of them.
Sure. You can't stop loving somebody because you disagree with them or know that they're wrong.
Yes.
I mean, and that's what makes it so rough, because you know that they're good people. They just have these wrong views.
Yes, that's it. Yes, you can. And they are my relatives. I remember them before they were born.
Yeah.
When you were waiting for them, and how they were kids, and how they grew up, everything. It's my family. Well.
Yeah.
My parents were like me, activists, and my mother was in Meretz, which is a kind of Zionist left party, peace party in Israel, Meretz. My sister is she married a religious guy, and then she became religious, and then she became a kind of settler. She doesn't live in a settlement, but her kids are do. They live. I say always, I will hear the bad news about a place after my nephew is moving to live. He has seven kids, and they are moving from place to place. And I know that I will hear about the new place he lives in, because they live in, because they will make problems there.
Okay.
They live in Siloam. They called it the City of David. And it took me time to understand that this is Siloam. And stuff like that. They show me the other side of the moon.
Oh,
they're
okay.
Not. I don't have such friends, only my family.
Oh, yeah,
I
right.
Don't,
it's harder to get rid of. But before we close, Tamara, what advice or what kind of words of wisdom can you leave us with? I loved it when you said you think that this is going to end soon. What else would you have to say to us?
What? I didn't hear it well. Sorry.
What would you have us think about or have us pray for or whatever, your last words of wisdom or your predictions
of,
or something.
I don't understand.
Wisdom? Chokmah?
Wisdom. About what wisdom? Wisdom of whom? Of
just,
who?
Just about the situation.
I think that people should see that this is, that we are all one, and this, we are the 99% of Earth. And we should be united, all of us, the Palestinians, Jews, the Catholic, whatever, Buddhist, everybody, atheist like me. We should unite to change this Earth, a better place to live.
I agree.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, too. Bye-bye.
Sarit, thank you. Well, we had a nice time even after that talking. We're all vegans. We talked about that. We talked about several things. And Tamar is a member of the Raging Grannies in Israel, which is a group of several ladies who perform around. They sing in English and in Hebrew. So I'm going to put up on Air Marte Fio page a clip from YouTube of them. And now, after we've had two serious segments about Palestine, Israel, we're going to go to something that's just as serious, but it may be a little bit more fun, with Morgan Jones. Hello, Morgan.
Hello, Roseanne. I was going to say, I'm definitely not lighthearted. Well, I'm not that serious.
Right. Paganism, it can be serious, and social polyamory, I mean, they are serious topics, but they're also more lighthearted. And the weather's warm. You're in Indiana and I'm in Illinois. We've had like high 80s today.
Yeah,
so
it's weirdly hot today. It's warm.
Yeah.
Especially after we've been so cold already this season.
Mm.
It's like, where's this coming from?
It's
going to be a very interesting summer.
Well, it's one of those days. It's like, okay, we know festivals are coming and, get some of those clothes off.
Absolutely. I'd be perfectly happy with like high 60s at night and high 70s during the day. That'd be perfect.
Yeah, I can go up as high as maybe 75, but that's good for me. That's good. But yeah, I have to admit that today has been one of those days, at least inside, with scant clothing, maybe, which just segues us right into festivals.
Absolutely.
You are the originator, founder, the big man for a couple different festivals held in Indiana.
I'm the founder of one. I've been running another for 6 years, another one for, it'll be 13 this year, and I help out with a bunch of other stuff, so yeah.
Right, so you know what there is about festivals, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But there's not that much ugly. It's usually it's the good and the fun. Now, I wanted to ask, are all the festivals that you run either pagan or pagan-friendly?
Personally, yes. Mm-hmm. All the festivals that I do are, I personally am the organizer for Horn and Honey, which is an event that's dedicated to celebrating the horn gods, earth goddesses, and goddesses of fertility. And then I also help run, I'm the organizer for an event called Labor Day Libertine, and Horn and Honey is at Our Haven in French Lick, Indiana, www.hornandhoney.org. Labor Day Libertine is an event that's not particularly pagan-oriented, but it is spiritual and magical,
right,
with sacred sexuality. Combined with exploring alternative lifestyles of polyamory and then kinky life, different information and different experiences of BDSM and pursuing the spirituality path through BDSM. And then I'm also, this will be my 13th year as local coordinator for Indie Pagan Pride Day. So, and then Indie Pagan Pride Day, we actually had 1,500 attendees last year. It was fantastic. Thank you for all your publicity. I appreciated it.
I think 1,500 people, that's very good. That is very good.
It's the third largest single-day pagan event in the nation.
Okay. Wow.
So, yeah.
Indianapolis.
Exactly.
Okay.
Indiana has the third largest single-day pagan event in the nation. So that's pretty good.
I think so, because while Indianapolis has everything, it's not a huge city.
We've got over a million people in the metro area. It's almost up to 1.5 million.
Okay.
And the biggest thing about it is that although we're in the middle of the Bible Belt, we are located in a way that there's so much through traffic because they call it the Crossroads of America because it has the most railroad lines intersecting anywhere east of the Mississippi. And then also it has more major interstates intersecting it than any other major city.
I did not know that, but that makes sense. I mean, it's easy enough to drive around. If I'm not going downtown, I mean, you know, you just take 465 around.
It's laid out exactly like Washington, D.C., and it's all in a big XY grid. So, yeah, it's really easy to get around on.
Yeah, it is. And you've been there your whole life, or at least a lot of it,
For most of it. I lived down in Florida for a little bit, but...
how did you get interested in paganism? Maybe we should just say, what is paganism? A lot of people use it derogatory. I mean, you know, they'll say, oh, that pagan, you know, like that's something bad.
You've thrown a couple different questions at me. Let me go ahead and start with what is paganism?
Right.
Paganism is, by the dictionary definition, any religion that is not Abrahamic-based. So if it's not Judaism, Islam, or Christianity, it's pagan, according to the dictionary. I know quite a few Hindus and Shintoists and Buddhists that would disagree with that.
I was just going to say that,
absolutely.
I have been taught that.
And the Zoroastrians, there's a whole lot of people out there that really kind of lumps together that doesn't belong together.
Right.
Usually pagan stands for the actual full term, it's a shortening, for neo-pagan. And basically, it's a person who has taken the old ways to bear and have meaning in their current day life. There's all kinds of different walks and paths to do it. There's people that follow ancient Egyptian, ancient Celt. There's some people that follow Grecian or Russian or the Baltics. I'm personally eclectic. The base of my path comes from, funnily enough, Boy Scouts. And growing up reading about Native Americans and learning about them and coming to love culture and embrace the spirituality and the love of nature that's inherent. And then that just evolved for me over time. I'm still a shamanic practitioner, but... I'm a priest of Pan and a priest of Astarte. I'm a child of the Horn God, and that's why I run a Horn God festival.
Right. Well, that makes sense. I want to say that you can be found at http blah, 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 pansdance.wordpress.com.
And also pansdance.com.
On pansdance.com. Okay.
As well. Yeah, I actually have them mirroring each other. So.
Okay. Okay. That yes. So, now how does polyamory? There again, would you like to define polyamory?
Polyamory is the belief that the human heart has the ability to love more than one person, and then practice that belief in open, honest, communicating relationships.
Like communicating is the optimum word there, exactly.
Absolutely.
Now, how do you think that more pagan people are poly is there high, I mean, I shouldn't say, you know, percentage-wise than the rest of the world, but is there a high number of pagans who are poly?
I would say that there is a significant amount, but I would also say that significant amount isn't higher than 5 or 10%.
Okay.
Maybe 1 out of 10. Maybe.
Okay.
And I think that has nothing to do with religion. I think that has to do with an openness to looking beyond what the what mainstream society prescribes is how you should live your life, and a willingness to open your heart to more than what is just what you're told you're supposed to expect and accept, what you're only supposed to take, you know? And I think there's so much more in life to what we're told we can have.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, that's kind of hell in my life.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that when it comes to, like, spiritual paths, that possibly more pagans, self-proclaimed pagans, and like we already talked, I mean, that can mean almost anything, depending on, would even admit to it than some other religions, because those religions forbid it.
Right.
And so people, while they may be poly, they're not totally open about it.
Right, right. And there are some religions that prescribe that that's how you're supposed to live your life, but that's not actually polyamory. That's polyandry.
Yes.
So there's a difference.
Yeah.
And yes, I mean, and there are Christians who are polyamorous. Most religions tend to shy away from polyamory. However, there are practitioners in almost every religious sect I know of.
Mm-hmm.
So in one way or another.
And it crosses the lines. It's not just straight people. It's not just gays or lesbians.
Oh, absolutely.
Or I mean, it's right across.
It's across the sexual orientations. It's across races. It's a human thing. It's an understanding that the human heart, not the man's heart or the woman's heart or anything like that, or the straight guy's heart, it's a matter of the human heart is able to open up and honestly and openly love more than one person.
Right. Well, you know, if people, and I don't have children, but I know people who do, obviously, and they love all of their children.
Oh, yeah.
So I mean, right there you see, okay, parents have this ability in their heart to love more than one of their offspring. So why wouldn't they have the ability to love more than one partner?
Right.
I mean, it only makes sense.
And actively work on themselves enough to a point where they can actively and honestly participate in multiple relationships.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard work. I mean, and I'm certainly not going to say somebody's lazy because they don't do it. I'm going to say that's not what they want to do, and that's not what's best for them.
Right.
But it's definitely hard work if it's a path you take. There's constant communication. There's constant you work constantly to make everything happen. It's just like having all the work that you have for a two-person relationship exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you have a third person, okay, so now you've got two full-time relationships, plus you have to deal with the dynamics of all three. And I mean, every time you add another person, it gets even bigger and bigger.
Well, right. And then you must consider these other people have other people too.
Right.
And so it's like, wow. And there again, it totally, because every relationship is different from others, because some people are involved with their other partners, others aren't. It's just totally whatever feels right for everyone. But
exactly.
Communication is so important.
It really is. And it's how everybody makes sure that they get what they need. And that's the thing, that's really what polyamory is about. It's about getting what you need. Generally, when you take another partner, you don't take somebody who's exactly like your first one.
Right. Right.
You find people that meet other needs, either that you didn't know and or knew, and you were seeking to have those met.
Yeah.
But I personally, for me, I do not see one person fulfilling all of my needs.
Absolutely not. And when people say, oh, you know, well, so-and-so, everything I ever wanted, on and on and on, and I just think, okay, you're delusional now and later. You know, it's going to come back because you're lying to yourself. No one fulfills all of those. You know, my thing, I think I told you before, is I used to tell people, well, you make a list of 25 things that you want in a partner. And back when I was much more into monogamy, I thought, well, and if you find somebody who meets 12 to 15 of those, God, snag them, because it won't get better than that. And then, you know, I looked around and I saw what was happening, and I thought, well, why am I trying to short myself all of this? If it takes three people for me to get these 25 things met, or these different qualities, and people, it's not all about sex either, you know, then three people it should be. And because it only makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So,
exactly.
I mean, you have different people that you like to do different things with, because it's, I mean, I've watched so many of my friends give up things that they like in life, whether it's dancing or going to plays or whatever, because their partner doesn't like it.
Right, right. And honestly, within my life, that's selfish. Of the person that doesn't want to do it to restrict their partner from doing it.
Yes. Or to make them feel guilty.
Right.
That martyr.
Well, I don't want to go dancing. Why are you going to make me go dancing? And then
the other person should be deprived
because they're not happy
you
with
go, go ahead.
That.
You go have a good time. Then, if she does and comes back and has to go through all that, well, you know, you could have just stayed home and watched TV with me. So who'd you dance with? What'd you do? On and on and on and on. You know?
Right. The jealousy of not going when you say you don't want to. Right.
Right.
And it boils down to the fear of abandonment and not wanting to be left out.
Mm-hmm.
Is that. But, yeah. And that's just a matter of being honest with yourself about why you're acting that way.
Yeah.
So.
And you know, if your partner is a truly loving partner, I mean, and they understand, but they would encourage you then, well, go someplace with somebody, whether it's a lover or a friend or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
they see that we aren't meant to be stuck up each other's butts.
Absolutely.
And
we all have our own lives. And I think, for me, that's one of the misconceptions of relationships. And, hey, some people, that works wonderfully for them. They want to be involved in every waking second of every moment of their partner's lives, and more power to them if they don't drive their partner crazy with it.
Ooh, just shoot
personally,
me.
I have my own life.
Exactly.
I have things that I like to do, and honestly, I have things that I do that other people don't like or understand. I work with computers a lot, and most of the women I date look at me with like, okay, that's really cool. I have no idea what it means. And that's fine, because they don't have to.
Right. Right.
They don't have to fill everything in my life and be that mirror image. So, yeah, that's just not for me.
Yeah. Is polyamory becoming more accepted or more mainstream now, Morgan? Because you've been at this a long time. I mean, that sounds funny. But, yeah, you've been
involved.
Well,
I have been.
Yes.
I've been a practicing polyamorist for about 30 years now.
Right. I mean, from the time you were a kid, you just wanted to tie yourself up with promises and things. So.
Well, and I didn't want to restrict them.
Right.
And I'm certain, I mean, to me, part of love is that core of wanting your partner to be happy, no matter what it takes for them to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, truly, in the end, for me, that's the truest sign of love. Is the accepting of, okay, well, that makes them happy. Even though I'm not into it, groovy. I want them to be happy.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's just people just don't quite understand that concept.
Well,
that your partner's fulfillment and happiness doesn't necessarily have to include you.
Exactly, all the time. Plus,
you can be a part of it, but you're not the center of it.
Right, because they're the center, or should be the center of their own world that way.
Exactly.
And, you know, it puts quite a bit of pressure on one person when their partner expects them to be everything,
mm-hmm.
the end-all and be-all.
Oh, yeah.
You know. I mean, that's a lot of pressure, because you're trying to live your own life, too, and yet your partner wants you to be all these things for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard one.
Yeah. And honestly, I think that's one of the things that really drives most relationships into problems,
mm-hmm.
is all that pressure that one partner will put on the other, or both partners put on each other, to be that knight in shining armor and that damsel in distress. Because while girls are taught growing up to be that they want to grow up to be a Disney princess, boys are taught that they're supposed to be the knight in shining armor. And believe me, we should be anything but. Women, people need to rescue themselves.
Yes, yes.
Or else they, or generally, if you don't, if you keep rescuing somebody, they rarely take responsibility and figure out how to stop getting in that same hole.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the whole rescue thing. I mean, there's times in the world in life when somebody needs rescuing. Okay, we're not saying.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
but we're helping somebody and
enabling
them and protecting
and
enabling.
Yeah.
Enabling is a perfect word for that. I've actually gotten an argument in my first marriage over that word.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. We won't go into that. But enabling really is what it breaks down to. It comes down to enabling a codependency.
Yes. Which is really a kiss of death for both of you. I mean, it's just not because it pulls in the walls of the box, you know, like we like to say there is no box, we're not in, you know, what box? But yet, if you have all those rules and you have to be all these things for this person, the walls are closing in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a pleasant thing. But I wanted to talk, now these festivals, most of them, well, the ones in French Lick are very, I should just say the when it, the Labor Day Libertine and the Horn and Honey, these are adult only festivals, I think. Yes.
They are 18 and over only, clothing optional festivals.
Yes.
If you want to wear clothes, yay, good. If you
sure.
don't want to wear clothes, okay, but carry a towel.
Right.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's not something that's required or anything. It's just, it's more about exercising your free will.
Right.
And if you would rather stand in the sun and enjoy the sun on you without any clothes interfering with it, go for it.
Right. I mean, and if you choose not to, nobody's going to come up and say, oh, you've got to get that off and rip off your clothes.
Exactly. And just because somebody's naked doesn't mean anybody can touch either.
Exactly. Yes.
Everybody always maintains control of their sexual person. And their
body. Respect is paramount, really.
We've had some issues with that last year, and those people were quickly escorted to the gate.
Yeah, as they should have been, right.
And aren't welcome back, so yeah.
Yeah, definitely, because we go to festivals to get away from the mundane and to really be around like-minded people, I mean, whatever that means to us.
And to be accepted as who you are.
Yes. Yes.
And that's truly what it is. It's being who you are and that freedom that goes with it. And other people have no right to interfere with that or impinge their own personal on you. Your right to be yourself extends to the tip of my nose.
Right. And like you said, like no touchy-touchy, this, you know, unless I invite you. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. But I know we're running out of time. Horn and Honey is June 28th through the 30th at Our Haven, which is ourhaven.info on the web. And then once again, it's hornandhoney.org. And then Labor Day Libertine is going to be August 30th through September 3rd. And it's also at Our Haven. And the web address for it is ldl.trythesalvo.org. We are on Facebook. So just look up the name of the event. The events are on Facebook. We have fan pages. Or find us through Our Haven.
Right.
And we're looking forward to people coming out and celebrating
the
horn.
Well, the country there is beautiful.
This is
southwestern Indiana.
Absolutely.
And it is absolutely lovely down there. There's national forests and all around.
Oh, yeah.
And, so, you know, you can't go wrong. It's just a group
really
of people who really do allow you to be yourself and encourage that.
Very much. And let me go ahead and throw in here also, I'm in the process of doing, I currently have 2 miles of trail open. And out of those 2 miles, it's all about going with the flow of the land and not disturbing what the mothers put there.
Okay.
And so there's been no large trees cut. We haven't cut any trees for camping spaces. We have 39 camping spaces up on the woods, plus over 100 acres that you can camp on. The total land down there is 184 acres. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And then 2 miles of trail that are totally with the harmony of the land. They are basically made with a brush cutter and a rake.
Yeah. So nothing was chopped down for this, and you just go around the big tree.
Exactly.
And that works.
We don't have to go through it. That's not what we're on this planet for.
That's true. We're here to live in harmony. Thank you, Morgan Jones, so much.
Thank you.
And we'll be posting these different sites, but you can go to pansdance.com or pansdance.wordpress.com to find out from Morgan more about these events, too. So,
absolutely.
Thank you, my friend. Happy summer.
Thank you, Roseanne. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.